welcome to episode 35 of Role Play Grow, the podcast for tabletop entrepreneurs, creators, and fans. I am Courtney Stover of Lighthearted Adventures, and in this podcast, we talk to the creators behind the brands in the tabletop roleplay gaming space about who they are and how they are turning their passion for gaming into a career. Today's guest is Cassie, the Dungeon Master for the visual novel style D&D podcast, Chosen Ones. They are also a very talented artist and animator. We chat about what it's like to DM an actual play podcast, how they unintentionally wound up with a year's worth of recordings due to COVID, how they add the visual elements for YouTube onto the show, and all about their art journey that led them to this point. This was another great conversation, and I hope you enjoy this look behind the scenes of this great show. If this is your first time tuning into Roleplay Grow, welcome! This podcast is a part of Lighthearted Adventures, which is a small company I co-founded with my husband. We offer a weekly blog on our website where you'll find tips for running games, free monthly one-shot adventures, product reviews, and more. You'll find that blog at lightheartadventures.com. Brenton also creates beautiful dungeon maps both on DM's Guild and on a commission basis. He is currently working on a series of map packs for Wild Beyond the Witchlight. There will be 5 packs total, one for every chapter, and they offer a look at some additional locations in the adventure. You can find all of those by going to dmsguild.com and searching for Lightheart Adventures as the author, or by going to lightheartadventures.com/shop to find all of our DMs Guild and DriveThruRPG publications in one spot. Another way you can support the show is by checking out our affiliate links, like Found Familiar Coffee, the most delicious and nerdy coffee you'll ever taste, and you get to collect some pretty cool D&D-themed art from every package. Go to foundfamiliar.com and enter code LIGHTHEARTADV to get 10% off your order, enjoy delicious coffee, and help me keep this show running. That is all for now, so please sit back and enjoy this conversation with Cassie. I am very excited to now introduce y'all to Cassie, the DM of the visual novel style D&D series Chosen Ones. Hello, Cassie. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for having me.
To start things off, can you tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into gaming?
Yeah, so I'm Cassie. I currently do remote work with kind of like video and animation and stuff like that, which is how I kind of apply that to the production that we work on. But then like in my free time, I also do a lot of animation and artwork and stuff like that. And that's kind of how I ended up meeting a lot of like storytelling type people, even at an early age. Technically, I did play D&D in high school, but it wasn't D&D. You know, you look back and you're like, whatever we played, we gave it the name of D&D, absolutely was not D&D. We did not play it correctly at all. But then in college, I kind of took it back and was like, hey, let's try playing this game together with some of my close friends at the time, because we had kind of been drifting apart a little bit as a friend group, and it was like a way to kind of reconnect us. So we got into D&D 4 or 5 years ago, I think, and we've just been playing ever since. Sometimes we delve into other systems. Not often. We usually just stick to D&D, but we've done like Monster of the Week and, you know, simple systems a couple times too.
Cool. Do you have a favorite outside of D&D?
I do really like Monster of the Week. I think my issue is because I play D&D so much, I try to play other games like D&D. So when I GM'd as for Monster of the Week, I would like almost kill people all the time. I'd be like, oh, you're fine. You could take it. Like, you know, I'm used to really hearty, high level D&D characters. It's just a different style. So I'd almost kill everyone like every game.
I mean, that brings its own type of fun.
Yeah.
Well, are you able to play in any campaigns outside of Chosen Ones?
Yeah, I'm in a couple right now. My partner who plays Brandy, she also has her own home game that I play in. Another close friend of ours, she runs a game that's kind of like fairy tale. It's her first time. I love playing with people who they don't DM as often, and it's her first like long-term D&D campaign that she's running, and that's always fun. Especially with a lot of people who constantly are DMs, like having them be the party. I think it's a fun mix.
You know, I can relate to that a lot because I am doing my first time campaign as the DM right now. And it's really helpful to have my spouse be in the party. So anytime I'm like, yeah, I don't know, I could just look at him.
I DM all the time, and I've said this before because people are always nervous about starting their own D&D games or podcasts or anything like that. And I'm like, I've never read the rules, like the actual rule book. I've always just Googled things as I've needed them. I've still never read the actual rule book for D&D. Mm-hmm. And I don't know a lot of the lore too. Everything's homebrew that I do. So for better or for worse, I didn't know there were a lot of like things in D&D already. I just kind of made things up. But I think that's nice. I think that's nice because it does also take away from the people who, I guess, which luckily I have not had happen, but like rule lawyers, I guess, or stuff like that, where if you follow too closely to the lore and like mess things up, like Mike pointed out, which we haven't had a ton of issues with that. We've had a couple things here and there for like homebrew rules, like that I didn't even know were rules. That's always when you put up out a public project, you always start to notice the things that you do that are wrong. And you never realized were wrong because you just had no reason to look it up. So you're like, oops. But yeah.
Yeah, I hear that. I think I opened the DMG for the third time today. So, but what's cool is that you don't have to, really.
Oh, yeah. I think people who stick too close to the rules probably would not enjoy a super narrative-driven podcast like us. Because while we do have fights and rules and things like that, we don't even have a combat until, I think, episode 7. We're very RPF heavy. And that's everyone's favorite part. Because we started before we played D&D. We started with just regular text RP was how like we all kind of like met each other, and then, you know, life. And it's much easier, surprisingly, for us to set aside like a couple hours, a couple times a month to play a game than to have like a text role play or something like that, where you have to be kind of more attentive and you always feel like people are waiting on you, you know? So D&D just made sense as we got older to do that instead.
Yeah, well, let's dig into this. So let's start by going over what is the Chosen Ones podcast about?
Yeah, so Chosen Ones is basically about a society where one person is kind of like the Chosen One. Everyone has these special abilities, or at least some people have these special abilities known as sparks. And if you have a spark, it means you have the potential to be a Chosen One. So we're kind of following our four protagonists who all have sparks. And there's basically some sort of potential for each of them to become a Chosen One. And they go to this like training compound with people who have previously been Chosen Ones, because it's not like you die. It's not like you're a Chosen One until you die. You kind of have a time limit based on how strong your ability is. And like the stronger the ability, the less you won't be a Chosen One for as long, kind of. And so they go to be trained by these people, and then they kind of discover like a lot of things along the way. Our plot right now is kind of blown out the water for season 2 where we are. It's completely different tone from season 1. So things get very weird the further you go down this rabbit hole. It starts off kind of with one line of thinking and then just completely dives and divides as you continue. And we're very mystery. And when I say we have a little bit of everything, I mean it. Like every genre you can think of, we probably touch on. So...
How did the podcast start?
This is funny because a lot of people, you know, started podcasts because of the kind of the way the world was at the time, and people had to stay home a lot. And so they ended up starting podcasts and things like that because they were staying home a lot. We actually had to delay. We started recording in January of 2020. And when things kind of blew up, we had to stop. So we had the opposite problem that a lot of other people did, where actually as things have started to like kind of kick back up, we've been able to be more consistent again. And I think part of that is just we all work from home. A lot of us work from home anyway, remotely. And so it just kind of just really threw us off. We had a lot of stuff going on. And so we didn't actually start releasing until June after we started recording. So started recording in January and didn't start releasing until June. And we've just done a lot of campaigns before. I've done motion comics in the past and audio drama work. So this kind of just felt like a natural progression of other projects that I have worked on in the past. But because of that huge gap between when we started and when we released, we are currently releasing episodes that we recorded a full year ago. So oops. But it's been nice, at least, for the fact that we don't have to constantly be recording. You know, we also record 5 or 6 long hour sessions. So one session a month is enough for the entire month, basically, of content. We've been on hiatus technically, and it's nice to, I think, have that big backstock.
Oh yeah, having a backlog is a wonderful thing.
Now I just wish it was edited for me, you know.
I hear that. Was there kind of like a big inspiration point or something that, yeah, what was the inspiration to start it?
In general, the idea, I do remember, I can't like pinpoint it to an exact thing, if that makes sense, because it's such a broad concept, like the idea of a chosen one, basically. We do get compared to a specific anime all the time, which wasn't my intention. We get compared to My Hero Academia all the time because of quirks. They're basically a society based on superheroes. And so I get where people make the comparison. We have our own like superpower name for like sparks and stuff like that. So I do get the comparison. I think my main inspiration probably was more so feeling stories like Avatar and stuff like that, where it's something kind of like passed down. And even if like an Avatar, the old Avatars aren't like actually there to like train them, it's kind of like that same like wisdom passing feeling, I guess. If I had to like pinpoint an actual like inspiration that I consciously made, probably that.
That's cool. Did you know from the beginning that you wanted to have a visual element to it?
Oh, absolutely. We've actually done a podcast before, and we canceled that because it didn't work the direction we were going. We released a couple episodes and then we decided to start from the beginning. And my audio actually messed up for that. So we weren't able to actually release the remake of the podcast because the audio was messed up. So we just played the campaign like normal for a year. And then when that ended, that's when we started Chosen Ones. So I already had kind of done something like this before, which was good because it has to have a lot of testing. So I kind of knew what worked. At that point, we'd only had released them like maybe once a month. So I knew going into this, like you have to be consistent if you want a consistent audience. So we knew coming into this, we were going to be releasing weekly and all that. And it is a lot of work, but I think it helped that we had that huge gap before we actually started releasing. So a lot of the artwork and assets could be created and gathered before we started putting out the actual product.
Yeah, that's really cool. Just for the sake of the listeners that may not be familiar with your show, can you describe what the visuals are?
Yeah. So we do have background like images, usually like stock images and stuff like that we have in the background. We also have some battle maps. Sometimes they're just used as a backdrop. Sometimes we do actually use them. So when you're fighting, you can watch us. We use Roll20. So you can actually like watch the fight take place. There are also visual effects in terms of like actual like special effects on the screen sometimes, depending on the scenes, sound effects, sound design, all that. Basically, for any scene that you are listening to, if you want to see who is in the scene and who is talking, you can look at your screen at any given moment and see kind of like a basic backdrop of where they are and all the characters that are talking. There's Easter eggs and things kind of thrown in to kind of incentivize viewing, because we do think that having the element of like watching it is different than just the audio. But you can listen to just the audio. If you've ever listened to the podcast version of the show, you would know I constantly say go to the YouTube version, but that's just because there's so many things that are added to it. Like we have an animated opening and ending. There's just so much work, I think, put into the visuals of the show that even if you can only look up sometimes, I think it just gives it a really different feel to have those visuals.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I'm admittedly very early on in watching, but I think it is really cool.
It only gets better. So,
I mean, it's good to start, but it's fun. Yeah. So I would love to hear about the process for getting those videos ready.
Yeah. So I do all the audio and video work behind the scenes for it. Besides, I do hire everyone who works on the visuals of the show, besides the map makers, which we're patrons of, and we give credit usually on the screen for them and also in the description. The character art and the animation is done by the cast. So our opening credits is done by Shayna, who plays Theo, and he did all the animation for the opening. And then I always do the endings. And then Ripley will do the thumbnails sometimes, and also some of the tokens. I also sometimes do thumbnails and tokens. We kind of jump back and forth on that. And then I have the Adobe suite. So a lot of it's just like After Effects, Premiere Pro, Audition. you know, doing all the audio first. And then after I've gone in and done all the sound effects and stuff like that, I'll go add the visuals on top of it. If it's a combat episode, I also have to edit the visuals for the combat. So combat is my least favorite to edit because it's like editing the same episode twice slowly because of that. Otherwise, it's not that hard for me to just have like, okay, this scene, these people talk. I know at this timestamp, this dramatic beat's going to happen. I'm going to change the lighting on the background or something like that. And I kind of plan the process while I'm doing the audio. So the video usually doesn't take as long as people think.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then you've recorded the audio, I mean, a year ago, it sounds like.
Yes. And we record on Discord. So we all do like the separate audio tracks. And then we clap. Yay. You know, to make sure our tracks are synced up. But yeah, and I think all of us, besides one of us, own Yeti products. And I haven't been yelled at. I've seen people be yelled at for using Yeti products. So I don't, I guess don't use Yeti. I don't know, honestly. I haven't found issues with them. I do get how if you're like doing this more professionally and are getting like a more, I guess, solid sound down, that like a USB mic probably isn't the best. But it works for what we do, so.
I mean, I use a Blue Yeti mic too, so like, it's fine.
They sound great to me. I'm sure people who deal really in depth with audio will be like, there's such a huge difference. And I'm sure there is. I just can't hear it.
Yeah, it's like, it's fine. It works. I guess like how far ahead of time are you working on editing each episode?
I've got really bad first season. First season, I actually, self-care, everyone, I really overworked myself when I was doing the first season because I was working two different jobs and trying to get the episodes up every week. I literally like made myself like sick a couple times, like trying to get the episodes up on time. And so that was bad. But I have learned we take a break every 5 weeks now, and that's kind of how I keep up. So I will try to get the episode done a day or two beforehand. Not always, though. Sometimes I'm literally uploading it like at midnight the day before. I think the closest I ever got was I was uploading it at like 8 a.m. and it was scheduled to release at 1. I think that's the closest I've gotten. And we do live premieres on YouTube. So you can watch with some of the cast members will stop in and we'll watch with you kind of basically. And you can live comment and stuff like that, which is another reason I think our show is good for visual elements is it really incentivizes coming to live viewings.
Oh, yeah. That's fun. How did you find the cast?
We're all friends, pretty close friends. My partner is in it. And also another one of my roommates is in it as well. He actually moved in after we recorded the first episode. And the other two, just close friends that I've known since, oh gosh, like 6 or 7 years now. I think 6, maybe. So yeah, I just met them all from art online, which kind of explains why we're all artists, is that's how we met. And then D&D just kind of was an evolution of what we did in our free time. That was a little more structured, I guess, you know?
That is really fun, though. Did you have to work to convince any of them to do this?
Oh, no. I just asked them, and they'd already done a podcast with me before, even if it didn't get very far. So they already kind of knew what it was going to be like. And they were excited about it. We started playing D&D, I think, before a lot of us kind of were into podcasts. So we weren't super familiar with D&D podcasts. But I do know after like a year of playing, we were interested in trying it because we found like the Adventure Zone and stuff like that. And we're like, oh, this seems fun. I do think it's also nice that we didn't get into D&D because of podcasts. I know I don't listen to Critical Role, but I hear about the Matt Mercer effect all the time. And we didn't really have that like background, I guess, of like listening to podcasts and knowing what they should be like. So we just kind of made it how we play, how our podcast is just how we play. We didn't change anything except we take breaks more frequently to make sure that our audio is okay. So
no, I think that is honestly kind of nice to be able to go into it without necessarily having that, I don't know, experience of watching other people doing it, because then it's like you don't know when it's going to influence, and it's like, no, you get to do it the way that you want.
Yeah, we get compared to shows all the time. And I'm like, I don't listen. I mostly listen to my friends' podcasts these days. So I don't know a lot of the shows that we're really like super compared to, besides the big names. So like critical role we've been compared to, but I haven't seen it. I have no idea. Like, you know, I just take people's word for it. And then also we get compared to Adventure Zone. I think the tie is probably we're just narrative focused. So I think we probably just could get compared to the podcasts that are more narrative focused.
It's interesting. Like it, when I am, I don't know, personally, when I'm listening to an actual play, it's always hard to follow the combat scenes. So I definitely prefer the more narrative focused stories.
Yeah, I feel that. It's hard for me to follow combat while I'm in it. So listening right? to it, you know?
Yeah, I know. Like, unless I am the dungeon master, I'm just like, wait, what happened? Where are people standing?
We cut so much down. Like, I think our combat episodes are usually double the length of what they originally were. So like a 1 hour episode of combat was originally like 2 or 2.5 hours because we just cut so much, you know?
I believe it.
It's not as glamorous as the final product.
I mean, that is like the cool advantage of pre-recording and not streaming it live.
Oh, I would die. That
you get to make it what you want.
I would die to stream live. I could not.
Cool. So something I would love to hear about is how you plan the campaigns and how that, if it differs, how it differs from when you're planning a campaign that isn't going to be produced for an audience.
Yeah. So that's, again, the hard thing. Cause I, like I said, we play our games just the normal way that we like. So the way that I plan this game is not any different because it's a podcast. It's the same way I would typically plan or play a game. And I think that's just best. I'm very big. I know it's also kind of hard to like be like, I'm very big on being genuine. Cause it can be hard to like chase that sometimes, but I do try as much as possible to make our show feel as genuine as it is when we actually record and not have like a constructed feel to it that comes with it being a production. And that just, I think, comes from us being close friends and it being easy to like bounce ideas off of each other. I'm not afraid to keep jokes in, you know, and have us joke around with each other and not always be 100% in character. So, but how I actually plan them, besides just the fact that we try to keep it as consistent as from home games to podcast games, is I usually have like Google Drive. I just have a bunch of documents. Whenever I scrap ideas, I also keep those though. So whenever people tell me like, oh, we didn't go down that route, what would have happened? I'm like, you will never know. I only have so many ideas in my brain. I'll probably use that again. You know? So I have like a big thing of like ideas that we didn't do that I may bring back at some point. I have a private Discord server for myself where I keep lots of like music notes and things like that. Cause we also listen to music while we play. I use like the Discord bots for as long as they will be around. Cause I know they've been being attacked lately, the Discord music bots, to kind of like bring atmosphere and stuff to the scenes. And yeah, it does kind of already feel like a production. If you listen to the show, I think even in the first episode, I use voice mods and those are not added post game. Those are in game that they are done. I use GarageBand. So basically when I use a voice mod that you hear in the show, it's the cast is also hearing it.
I feel like I really want to know what that setup is.
I only know how to do it with GarageBand. So I cannot help you if you are not a Mac user, unfortunately.
Fair enough. I mean, it's definitely something I've been thinking about for my own just home campaign is like, okay, I have a really cool voice modulator, but getting it to play for them as I'm speaking live. Haven't figured that out for a PC yet.
Yeah, I don't know. Unfortunately, I've only managed to figure it out with GarageBand because a lot of the Windows programs don't work on Mac. So I haven't even been able to try, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's really cool, though, that you are able to have that be modulated like right from the beginning.
Yeah, it also helps because then I can adjust because my players will tell me if they could not understand me. So either that means I have the chance to repeat it, or I can go fiddle with the mod to make it more easy to understand. And we also, season 2 started to add subtitles for when I use mods because we were told that, like, you know, some people have hard of hearing or just issues paying attention and stuff like that. It was difficult for them to hear. So we did start adding subtitles for when people with voice mods speak.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's really helpful. Okay. So obviously when a session like this, things are going to be changed with whatever the players do. Do you still try to stick to kind of overarching plot points or do you just go with whatever they wind up doing?
The ending for this game has changed many times already. I even things of like, I got more attached to NPCs than I thought I would at certain points. So I was just like, okay, I guess they're like, you know, stuff like that, that even I didn't plan on, where things, people had like bigger roles than I had expected. Or I just really ended up liking something and I kind of like added more to the character. So even just small stuff like that. But in terms of like big plot stuff, it's changed a couple times. I've been pretty set on an ending. And I mean that there's always a chance it could change. I try not to actually write for my sessions until like basically the session or two before. I'll have a document that's like 4 or 5 pages and I try not to write more than that, because I think once I have something written down on paper, it's very hard for me to want to kind of go a different way. So if I write down all my major plot points and all the things that I want to do and want to happen, I feel like I'm more likely to railroad. So I try only to write down what I know I'm going to need and use for the next 1 to 2 sessions. So then if they do veer off the path, I don't have that feeling of I just put and wasted so much time into like making and writing all these encounters or sessions that we aren't going to use because they went a completely different way. You know, I think that's, if you're someone who's worried about like spending a bunch of time on work that you won't utilize, or just are worried about planning in general, I think just planning session to session or 1 or 2 sessions ahead is enough to keep that your stress down and you're also like planning time down. But there are also people who just love that, you know, they love to write out all the scenarios and the different things that could happen. And that's like super fun for them too. So it just depends on the DM.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I know that, you know, you talked about that you play it like you would just any normal home game, but I just always like to know like, okay, well, I mean, are there plot points that you want to hit no matter what, or is it just going to be different every time?
I think that's normal even for home games, though, like not podcast production, to kind of have an idea. And I this gets tricky with some people, because there, some people are like, I want free choice. I want all the free choice and I don't want you to railroad me at all and stuff like that. I think railroading is not bad if you want to define it that way, if that's the word that we're using. It is not bad if the players don't know it's happening, I guess. If everything feels natural and normal and their choices feel like they have an impact and they matter, and it just feels like the natural progression of things, if they don't feel like they're being railroaded, then they're not being railroaded, you know? I think it's when you make choices and the DM kind of goes out of their way to make it not have any impact that it's like railroading, where you're like, I'm going to go right. And they're like, well, I didn't plan for you to go right, so actually you're going to go left. Like, that's railroading, you know? But I also think most people are just happy to have a DM. So like, if you do something that they don't plan for, then that's just like communication and just being like, hey, to your party, I didn't plan for you guys to do this. Like, you totally can. We might have to take a break, or just know that like, I don't have notes prepared for this, so we're going to be a little loose right now, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think people will come into it with a lot more understanding if you're transparent that way, and you don't just try to act like, oh, I totally got it under control and I know exactly everything and I was ready for this, you know?
Yeah, I think those are really good points. Hey, entrepreneurs, I love introducing you to new creators every episode, but I could really use your support. I would love to invite you to join our Patreon page, where you'll gain access to behind the scenes content, add your questions to upcoming interviews, and you could even receive a shout out on our site in an upcoming episode. To learn more, go to lightheartadventures.com/RPG. And now back to the show. When did you start DMing?
So I was our first DM for our group, Forever DM, but also luckily Ripley DMs a lot too. So we are constantly in each other's games, but not like playing with each other. And again, Ripley plays Brandy. but I started with our group initially, and we did finish. Our first campaign was, I think, 13, 15 sessions, somewhere in there, and only went over the course of 3 or 4 months. It was very loose and kind of silly. I based a lot of it on the D&D campaign I was in high school, and it kind of did set this weird precedent of, like, we have to finish games. And I think that's kind of a bad mindset, actually, to go into with D&D, is when something stops being fun and stops working, you should stop. It is a game at the end of the day. And I think going into Chosen Ones, we all already had the idea that if this ever stopped becoming fun, especially for me, the DM, then we would stop. And I think that is nice to know that I could do that and people would be okay with it, because it is a game at the end of the day and we are close friends. And I do think podcasts can sometimes set that precedent that people are like, we have to finish our games. Like, look at these huge long form podcasts that did so successful and were great. But like when you're just doing like a home game or even like I said, another podcast, like being okay with not finishing, I think is something that is a big thing that gets missed a lot in D&D.
Yeah, I like that a lot because it really does come back to whatever you're doing in life. Like you should be doing it because you're having fun. And especially if it's playing a game, like it should be fun.
Yeah, this is a hobby for a lot of people. Some people have the goal of making it a job eventually, but even at the end of the day, you don't want your job to also be unpleasant, you know?
Right.
So it should be first and foremost enjoyment. And people can also, I feel like they do have a sense too, of like, if you're not having a good time, then that'll leak out and like people listening will probably be able to tell eventually as well. So you shouldn't force it. There's so many things that go unfinished. I'm saying this like I'm foreshadowing, and this is how I'm going to say we're canceling. No, that's not. But I just want to press that because I do feel like that has come up constantly in my time playing this game, is people feeling so bad when things don't finish. And I'm just letting everyone know that it's okay and things happen.
It's okay, but they're not finishing anytime soon. Well, yeah. So speaking of, I know you've got 2 seasons. You've been going for...
Yeah.
Episodes out for a while. How long is season 2 going to be? Do you know?
We are preparing right now, time this recording, for our season finale. So our season finale is going to be October 28th, whenever this airs. Maybe it's out. Who knows? I think so. It's probably out by now.
Yes.
So we actually originally didn't plan to have seasons. We started them because one of our listeners suggested it, because we were worried that the higher the numbers are going to get, the less likely people seeing new episode releases, especially, which are more likely to come up in search results, would click. Because if you look at a show that's got 60 episodes versus a show that's got 10, it's going to be easier to kind of jump in or give it another look than something that's a super high commitment. So we started seasons to kind of not make it look as intimidating from a numbers perspective. So season 1 ended and we prepared for it very little. So we decided very fast that we were going to do a new opening and ending. And I think the opening was made in 2 weeks and the ending was made in 8 days. So like we just went into it, you know, we were like, we don't want a huge gap between seasons because of breaks and losing momentum and stuff. And so we just kind of really hit it home to be able to start season 2. Which is also why season 2 is shorter, because now that we know we're doing seasons, we have better planning. And season 2, it will be episode 24 or 25, one of those. Math. Basic math that I don't want to do right now. So one of those two. And that will lead into season 3. And we know we're for sure going to have at least 4 seasons. We're actually about to start recording the 4th season. So season 3 is already all recorded.
Oh my gosh.
So we just don't know if season 4 is going to actually be our last one. It feels like it. Season 3 is our favorite of the entire show. And I do think that this show starts strong, but we are the longest of slow burns. So it isn't until near the end, like the last like 10 episodes, or the last like 7 or 8, I think maybe, of season 2, that like things actually kind of like start to ramp up and hit their like peak kind of. And season 2 is kind of where it's like it goes down. Like the end of this season is going to be wild.
Yeah, that is really cool. That like I feel like my mind is blown right now. Like, yeah, you already have the entire next season recorded.
No, I was. Awesome. We had an episode that released today, and I had been talking about something that one of the cast members had said or something like that. And I went in, I took a screenshot of it to show to everyone. It was literally dated for 9/2020. The screenshot to show that we are a full year ahead from when that episode was recorded.
That's amazing.
I never want to do it this like this again. I never want to have this much of a backlog ever again. It was an accident and I regret it. It's so hard because, okay, the thing is, I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but the thing is, we've been recording since January of 2020, right? And I've had this plot planned, parts of it and certain elements of it, for even longer than that, for maybe 4 or 5 months longer than that. So the season 2 ending, I have known for like 2 years, and it's killing me that I've had to keep it a secret for this long. And my cast is kind of the same way, because they're like, it's been a year. And I'm like, for you, it's been a year. It's been 2 for me. I want this to be done. I hate revealing spoilers. It's a big thing for me. I know a lot of people don't care about it. I personally do. So I'm very like locked tight. Like we have like spoiler areas in the server that you can only in our Discord server, you can only access with a certain role so that you won't get accidentally spoiled and stuff like that. Cause it's just a big thing for me. I feel like you can only experience something once and have it be raw and fresh and not know what's happening. Like you only get that once. And so I always try to like shield people from spoilers as much as possible. Even if they were like, no, I don't care. I'm like, but I care for you. You aren't spoiled.
I am the same way, honestly. Like, and my roommate does not care about spoilers. And so she'll just start saying things. And I'm like, shut up. Stop talking. But anyway.
I'm trying to get better about it. Because I also know that spoilers pique interest. When people see things, the most interesting bits of something, they get interested. And they want to know why that happened or why that's going on. Mm-hmm. That's why whenever people like find out about like villains and stuff, like a lot of the times villains like sell a show. So like people will be interested even if they kind of like already know how the villain dies or something like that, you know, because they want to see how that plays out and like what happened and why people are talking about it. So we have started to make some content because I also do animation stuff in my free time. I have started to make some kind of like promo animations, I guess you could call them that, that do have spoilers in them. I just still put a spoiler warning. But I know that like most people who stumble across those animations probably haven't seen the show. But it could spark the chance of them seeing it. And it's like, okay, they could be spoiled for this thing. But if they hadn't seen it, they might not have watched the show at all. So it's, you know, wrestling with myself with that logic that makes sense. But I hate spoiling people.
No, fair enough. So I am curious about your recording setup and then if that has changed over the last year.
Yeah, I still use Yeti products. When I first started recording, I can't really speak for the other people because we record remotely. So I don't know what everyone else's setup is kind of like. But for me, I have like the blue Yeti X and a compass arm that kind of goes over my desk. And when I first started, it was just my super old, like 10-year-old Yeti that was having issues. And that's what I started with. And you can tell if you listen to old episodes versus new episodes, you can totally tell it's bad because it was just old and far away from my face. And that's what I started with. So then after I moved to the Blue Yeti X and got like the blue compass arm and stuff like that, it's gotten a lot better. First of all, because the compass arm, I can extend it closer to my face. I also have it. So I've got two screens set up, one for my notes and one to record for podcast sake so that they can see Roll 20 if we end up getting into any fights or stuff like that. So I have the screen recording. And my issue with my old setup was my mic was facing away from my second screen. So whenever I would need to look at something for notes, I would face away and I would continue to talk, which was bad. And I had to re-record a lot of lines that were just completely unintelligible or had broken up from my mic kind of slowly failing over time. But yeah, I highly recommend if you do work at and like do a remote setup where you are recording with other people to get like a compass arm or just some kind of arm for your mic because it's so useful to be able to move it. And there's some cheaper options too. I just got this one because it was highly recommended and I wanted it and I didn't have to do a ton of research if I just got this, the one for my mic. But yeah, it's been super nice for helping me to keep my sound more consistent because I can put it where I know I will be facing and also don't have to worry about it like knocking into other stuff or like me knocking into my mic because it is like suspended and away from me.
Cool. That's awesome. It's kind of similar to what I have too. So I'm just like, yes.
Boom arms are life changing. Why really did I never get one before?
Yeah. So did you ever record in person or has it always been remote?
It's always been remote just because we're all over the place. Me and my partner were long distance even before we moved in with each other. She's originally from California and I was in Minnesota. We had someone else in Ohio, someone else in Georgia. And I think, I always mess up where Jay lives. Somewhere to the right of me. I'll say the wrong thing. But we're basically all over the board. So it would have been next to impossible to record in person. And I also just prefer, I have a really, really bad poker face. And I know I do because Ripley will specifically come into my room after sessions to like theorize at me. Because again, we're super big on the mystery element for our show because she wants to read my face and she wants to see if I give something away. So I can't do in session, like in person stuff if I want to have like a serious plot or like keep things hidden, my face will show. So I just need to be like hidden. And I think it also helps because we're all visual people, we're all artists. It's easier for us to picture things like that. And it helps us get more in character. And it also makes it so like if someone has to like step away or something like that, it's not going to mess up a recording because it's just one person like muting their mic versus like someone being like, oh, I have to get up and like, you know, we all have to wait and pause, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, I do want to make sure that we devote a little bit of time to learning more about your art and your animation experience and all of that fun stuff. So how did you get into that?
So I started drawing actually a bit later than I think some people. I think I started like freshman year of high school. And I think most people at that point had already been like drawing when they got into art. And the reason that I specifically got into art was because I started off wanting to make like films and stuff like that with my friends. And no one would ever show up because we're like high schoolers. So no one would ever show up to filming. And so I ended up getting into art because I'm stubborn. I still am stubborn, but I was also very stubborn then because I was like, if people won't show up, I'm just going to draw them basically. So I got into making my own like animated shows and motion comics and things like that because it was easier to get people to voice record lines and send them to me over the internet than it was to get all my high school friends to show up to film. So that's how I ended up getting into art and animation. When I started going to school, I was going to go for film originally, but they were really interested in like the animation work that I was doing instead. So I ended up going to school for animation. I have a degree in animation. I don't do a lot of just straight up animation these days. Most of what I do is video compositing and editing, which I'm more interested in, like motion graphic work. So I don't do a lot of like traditional like Disney style animation stuff, but I do sometimes for fun. And yeah, that's kind of how I got into art. And it's just, I think doing this specifically, like doing D&D stuff, is just a lot more manageable for me because making a whole animated show by yourself is very hard. I don't recommend it. And there's no way it would have finished because my plots are just as complex for D&D as they are for my regular writing. So it's just like this format and this style makes me make stuff. And consistently too. Like I'm releasing a video every week pretty much. And it still has art elements in it. And there's still sometimes animation. So it's still similar to what I used to do. It's just kind of simplified to be able to do it like every week.
Yeah. How often are you working on other motion graphic projects?
Well, they do vary. My like main job, I work in like social media. So I do have some experience with that. And it's pretty simplistic video work for them. Sometimes they do more advanced motion graphic work and stuff. And that's my main job. Besides that, sometimes I'll do other contract works. Like I've done lyric videos for people. Animated music videos are pretty popular. That kind of content. Every now and again, I'll do actual podcasting editing for other people too. It just kind of depends. I'm a little all over the board. If it's audio, video, art-based, pretty much that kind of stuff is what I work on for other people's projects. Mostly corporate, but I do some passion projects, like I said, for like lyric videos and musicians and stuff.
Yeah. How do you find clients?
I use Upwork I don't recommend it. I use Upwork as my main source to get contracts and stuff like that. And I'm like the top rated or whatever it is because I've been doing it for so long. But if you can get money and make money without being on Upwork, you should do it. And because it's very easy to get sucked into it. And well, because now when people look up my name, I come up on Upwork first because that's where all my work is. So, and Upwork takes a fee. So if you can work not on Upwork, it's good. It's good to do that. I do have some clients who aren't on Upwork, but most of it comes from that. And part of that is just because I'm top rated. So people just send me like stuff at this point. Like I don't have to apply to anything anymore. People are just like, hey, your profile says you do stuff. And I'm like, I sure do. Are you going to pay me enough? Nope. Okay. Bye. Like, you know. But for people just starting out who want to do either like podcasting or animation or that kind of stuff, it is an okay place, I think, to get some experience, but it's a lot harder, I think, to get started than people realize. I do a lot of like, I help a lot of people get started who want to try on Upwork, and you have to be really consistent. So it's like anything. You can't just throw yourself onto it and think you're going to be successful. You kind of have to push at it. And this is not an ad for Upwork. I think I specifically said don't use it. But But that's where I get my work.
Honestly, I'm not super familiar with Upwork. Is it kind of like Fiverr?
Kind of, except I think it's better. I think Upwork is like a lot longer term jobs, or there is more opportunity for growth. So my job that I work at right now is from Upwork. So they pay me through Upwork. I track my time on Upwork, and that is my like main job. It's like 20 to 30 hours a week. And then I have side contracts for other things. And I've worked with them for a year just on Upwork. But you can't get off once you start. You have to work for them for like 2 years or something like that. I'm sure this is so interesting. Oh, Upwork, I love it. That's what I came here to talk about. No.
On the one hand, it's like, oh man, like I was here because I wanted to hear about Chosen Ones podcast. And on the other hand, hey, guess what? At Roleplay Go, we talk about how you make money doing stuff you like.
Yeah. But also, I won't shut up about it, because like it's not that interesting to people unless they ask, like, and they're like looking for information about it. So the second someone like asks me about Upwork, I'm like, oh, here we go, my 5-hour conversation that no one ever wanted. It's coming, you know.
Well, hey, here we go. There's another thing to maybe look into, except that Cassie says don't do it. But hey,
I think it's mostly because it's a lot harder to get started than it used to be. I think I got in at a good point because I didn't have to like pay to apply to jobs when I started. And now you do. So it's one of those things. Yeah, you have to pay. You get some free. You can apply to like 3 things a month or something like that. It used to be a lot more. You got a lot more free jobs a month. And I just lived off that, the free jobs that they gave you. And now it's like a pay model because a lot of the places are kind of going to that model. It sucks. But if people invite you to a job like I do, I don't have to pay to apply because they invited me.
Okay. Interesting. Well, I'll bring it back. I mean, honestly, this is interesting to me, but I'll bring it back. So something that I do want to make sure that we have time to talk about is a couple questions that I like to ask in every interview, which really what I like to do is kind of highlight that as fun as it is to work with D&D or other tabletop games, and as much as we like it, there are some challenges. So I would like to know that over the last really 2 years that you've been planning and working on this podcast, what would you say has been the most challenging part?
Oh gosh, I think honestly, this for some people, like this might be an annoying thing to talk about, but growth has been kind of difficult just because I do work in social media. So I'm very familiar with algorithms and like looking at things and seeing numbers and that kind of stuff and knowing when things are doing well and when they're doing poorly and like when we're experiencing growth and when we're in a down period and stuff like that. And so it does take some of the enjoyment out of it for me because I just know things whether I like it or not because of my training, and it can be hard not to focus on numbers. And I think honestly, that's been the hardest part is we are a big fish in a small pond, if that makes sense. When a lot of things started during the pandemic, we did pretty well. But like in the grand scheme of podcasts, we're not that big. We're pretty small. So it's like that weird thing of like being around a lot of people, especially in Twitter spaces and stuff like that, who we are doing like we are pretty successful. And then like by comparison, by a lot of podcasts that started when we did, we are pretty successful, but like we still don't, it's a super, super slow growth, you know, like every month we get maybe like 5 or 10 people who get added on for the people who are caught up every week. So, and that's for like a year, but yeah, not to get like, I get sad when I think about it too much. Cause it's kind of like, I feel like we are making something that is so different. And I know everyone says that about their projects, but I do feel like we are making something that is so different and there's so much LGBT rep in it. And it's the kind of content that I wish I had had when I was younger, if that makes sense. And I make the content that I want to see. That's how I've always been. So it's just like, if people would just look at it, you know, and it's just that hard feeling of like, if people would just pay attention, but it's just, you're fighting the algorithm at that point. When you don't have a backing, like when you don't have a big network or something behind you, which a lot of the big podcasts do, then it's just luck of the draw, kind of, unfortunately.
I can relate to everything you're saying so much. It's true though. Like, okay, yes, there's a lot of podcasts out there that talk about D&D and tabletop gaming and stuff, but it is really interesting, especially like as I've gotten more into listening to different actual plays over the last year. Yeah, they're all so different. Like, you're going to get something unique out of every show. And
yeah,
I mean, for one thing, like, I very much appreciate that you cut down your episodes to be around an hour-ish, because I like shorter episodes.
Oh, yeah. We get so many. We have every now and again, because they're all different lengths. It's just dependent on how we cut it. So we have some episodes that are a little over an hour, and we have some that are below. Whenever we get an episode below an hour, people are like, why is it so short? And, and I'm like, you should be lucky. They should be on the shorter end. It's just, I could not find a better point to cut it when the episodes are like an hour 10 or something like that. It's just because I prefer them to be under an hour, both because it's easier for me to edit and also because it's more consumable. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that y'all have it as shorter episodes. And then I love the art. It's so cool. It's such a unique take on a way to visually present it.
I wish it had a better name, because I'm like, we're not really a podcast, but we're not like an animated show. We're not a visual novel technically either, but like that's why we say visual novel style. We are finally to the point where we've gotten a couple people who are like, how are you podcast if you have visuals? But now we have the podcast on an RSS feed, actually. So we can be like, well, there is a podcast version. Originally, when we started, we didn't start putting it on Anchor until like 6 months or something after we started releasing. So, or it might have been later than that, but yeah.
Like, I know of a ton of podcasts that record and it's just talking heads. So whatever. It's still a podcast.
Yeah. If you say it's a podcast, it's a podcast.
Exactly. Well, let's flip around that question and go into more happier spaces. So again, over the last couple of years, as you've been getting this going, what would you say has been the most rewarding part?
Ironically, it's funny because of what I said, like the views were the thing that was the most difficult. And I think it's just because of the growth aspect of it, of like not having like a big spike or anything like that, just very slow growth. But honestly, I was never expecting this many people, I think, at the same time. Like, we have 200 people who listen every week right now, I think was our numbers. And that's just like who will be caught up before the next episode, because it's hard to track on YouTube, like what your actual audience is. But like doing the math, we have about 200 people who watch every single week, which was more than I thought. And my ideal audience at this point, I think, is around 1,000. Like, that would be, like, cool if I could get, like, 1,000 people watching a month. But when we started this out, we didn't have any expectations, you know, at all. We didn't think this was going to be big. We didn't even make the Discord server forever because we just didn't think there was going to be a want for it. And we've got over 100 people in there now, too. And I think it's just the people that have told us that this helped them, especially, too, during the pandemic and or just with issues that we touch on at certain points, that like this series helped them in some way, which is something I never would have imagined hearing.
That is really awesome and special. And the thing I love too about hearing that there's that many people caught up is that that's people that are caught up that have been sticking with the story.
It's too hard to determine because you have to do it per episode and we're like, what, 50 something? I don't want to do that every week. For every single episode to see who's caught up and how many are and how much our numbers are. And we Anchor, obviously, we have numbers on there too, but we're not consistent. So it's not a huge audience on the podcasting stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, it is still a significant number, I feel like. So
absolutely. Well, is there anything coming up soon that we haven't talked about that you're excited about and want to share?
Yes. We are starting a Kickstarter early November for our season 3 opening and ending credits. I won't reveal the name of the singer we got yet because we haven't fully locked her in yet, but we got a pretty significant singer to sing an original ending score for our ending credits. And we're still doing original animation and artwork for the ending and the beginning again. But we wanted it to be really special because season 3 is our favorite of the entire series. So we really pulled out all stops for it. And it's going to be expensive. So we're starting a Kickstarter to try and help raise funds early November for our season 3 opening and ending credits.
That is so exciting.
Yeah.
I will definitely be sure to point people with a link to that Kickstarter. But Cassie, this has been awesome. Tell me, where can people find you, find Chosen One's podcast, and just all of the information that's out there?
Yeah. Our two most active social medias are Chosen Ones D&D at Twitter. And then my YouTube channel, it's my personal YouTube channel, which throws people off sometimes. But it's Casserole, spelled C-A-S-S-I-R-O-L-L. But if you click on the channel, it's very Chosen One-centric, so you'll know you're in the right spot. And then besides that, I feel like we're going to start using it more, so I'm going to say we're also on TikTok. If that's your preferred social media, we'll be putting clips and bloopers and things up on there, and that's also Chosen One's D&D.
Awesome. I will have links to all of those in the show notes. But thank you so much for coming on today. This has been really fun.
Yeah, thank you again for having me, as my voice slowly leaves me in that sense. Thank you for having me.
You just finished another episode of Role, Play, Grow. To check out the show notes from today's episode, you can go to lightheartadventures.com/RPG. To keep up with every episode, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice. And if you're enjoying the show, I would absolutely love if you would leave me a review and share this episode with your friends. Your review might even get featured on an upcoming episode. To follow me on Twitter, you can either find me at LightheartADV for our business account, or at KetraWCR for tweets on gaming, my dog Bowser, and other random shenanigans. You can also find us as Lightheart Adventures on both Instagram and Patreon. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time on Role, Play, Grow.